Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
Tell you what we're going to do to start off today. I want you to turn to one, two, three, eight people around you, okay? However big a team that you want. And what I want you to do is I want you to take out the notes app on your phone or a scratch piece of paper if you got it. And I want you guys to attempt in 3 minutes to write down the first 10 amendments to the Bill of Rights, okay? You are going to write down the first 10 amendments to the Bill of Rights. And if you get your cell phone out and cheat, God will know, all right? So, 3 minutes on the clock. You're going to turn to people around you, make a friend, include everyone. Ready and go. All right, so the first one is speech, right? Everybody's favorite, right? Freedom of speech. Everybody, yeah, yay, America, right? The freedom to assemble. The freedom of religion, freedom of bear arms, okay? Again, not bear arms like I have, like bear arms like many of you have. The freedom to due process. Let's go to the next list. The right to jury and trial, right? Then there's search and seizure. Cruel and unusual punishment. Thank goodness for that. Some people would say we experience that one every day right now in America. But the freedom of cruel and unusual punishment. And then the quartering of soldiers. Now, how many of you got those? That's 9. No, not at all. Pretty close, okay? Now, there is a 9th one. There is number 9. There is a 9th one that somewhat baffles people, that people forget, but it's probably the most important amendment in the Bill of Rights. And it goes like this. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others, as in other rights, retained by the people. Now, who in the world knows what that means? Let me translate it for you. Here's how I would put it. I have the right to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, as long as it doesn't interfere with anyone else's amended 9th Amendment right. So here's what James Madison's idea was behind writing this right, is that he wanted people to understand that not every right is the only right that you have listed in the Bill of Rights. You have other rights. But here's the thing. You can do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, as long as it doesn't interfere with anybody else's 9th Amendment right to do what they want, when they want, with whom they want. So I'll give you some examples, right? How many of you would agree that you have the right to privacy? Anybody believe that they have the right to privacy? Okay, where did you get that from? Because there's no Bill of Privacy. There's no right listed in the Bill of Rights that says that you have a right to privacy. However you do, because in the 9th Amendment, this fits inside of that category. In the 1920s, the Supreme Court decided that people had a right to privacy. Because what happened was is they got into a situation where neighbors felt like they had the right to know what was going on in their neighbor's house. And so they would go and they would snoop on their neighbor. And somebody said, hey, you know what? I know that you have a right to do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, and snoop on my house, but I believe that I have the right to privacy. And so your 9th Amendment right is infringing on my 9th Amendment right to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, which is to have you not snoop on my house and on my property. And therefore, the Supreme Court decided that people had the right to privacy. Or in 1965, Griswold versus Connecticut, two doctors opened up a birth control clinic where they created a small little pill that would prevent pregnancy. Well, the government found out about this and found out that they were making it and that they were selling it, and they actually arrested the two doctors. And their lawyer's argument was, hey, hold on, people have a 9th Amendment right. If it's not illegal to have contraceptive that would block the birth of a child, then you know what? People should be able to choose whatever method of contraception that they want to use. And so if people want to take this little pill that would prevent them from having a baby, then that should be totally fine. People should have a right to do that because the Ninth Amendment rights state they can do what they want, when they want, with whom they want, as long as it doesn't impose on anybody else's Ninth Amendment right. And they said birth control doesn't do that. And the selling of this pill doesn't infringe on anybody else's right to do what they want, when they want, with whom they want. And so they won. And now we have birth control. Yay, right? But that's just some examples. Not every right that you have is listed in the Bill of Rights. You have other rights. And the Ninth Amendment protects that and lets us know that there are other rights that we have. Now, here's a very, very important question, though, right? Here's a little intelligent question. Rights, why is there no bill of responsibilities, right? If there's a bill of rights, if there's a list of rights that you have, why is there no bill of responsibilities? Anybody else ever think of this? You know, wouldn't it be really, really smart to have this list of rights next to responsibilities? Because here's what we all know. We all know that rights have to be coupled with responsibility, right? Rights have to be coupled with responsibility. I'll give you a perfect example, okay? A perfect example is when you got your license, when kids are able to drive. When you become 16, you are legally able to drive. And so you can go to the DMV, you can take the test, and if you pass that test, you can get a license. And then guess what? Legally, you have the right to drive a vehicle. But here's what we all know. When you get in that car and you first get those keys and you look and you start that baby up and you look at it and you go, hey, that thing says 120. This can go up a little bit faster than I have seen before. This can go a little fast. And you go, I wonder what that would be like. And then you start to think about all the places you could go. I mean, technically, legally, you have the right. You could take that car. You could drive it to Florida. You could drive it to Mexico. You could drive it to Canada. You could pretty much take it wherever you want. And then did you ever think about this? Because it crossed my mind whenever I got the keys to my first car, is I thought, you know what? My parents are always snooping on me, always telling me what I can and can't do with the house. But this car, this is like a portable room. You know what I mean? Especially when your first car was like a van, you know, you're like, this is a big portable room. You know what I mean? I can go get my girlfriend. I can go get my boyfriend. I can go to Mexico. I can do whatever I want. You have that right. It's not illegal. You can do that. But every parent knows you don't do that, right? And that's why every parent, before you hand that teenager the keys, you put the fear of God into them, right? And you give them restrictions, and you tell them they have to be responsible, and you give them a curfew, because rights have to be coupled with responsibilities. So why is there no list of responsibilities? Well, I'll tell you exactly why. Because the founding fathers of our nation, the writers of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights were Christians. And there were assumptions that came when they wrote our Constitution, when they made the American system. And one of the biggest ones that becomes very flawed and evident today is that they believed that everybody else would be Christian. There's three assumptions that we find in our Constitution all throughout it, okay? That they had because they were Christian. There was a consensus of conscience. They believed that everybody was going to believe the same thing because they did. They were Christian, and so they all believed what was right, and what was wrong, and that it was very clear. There was no gray. Everything was very black and white. And so nobody thought that you would have to bring up some of the issues that are brought up today because there was a consensus of conscience that, you know what? Everybody has the right to be a parent. We don't need to write that in the Constitution. Everybody has a right to be a parent. However, nobody ever thought for a second that we would have to write a bill of responsibilities that would remind people that although you have the right to be a parent and have children or have as many children as you want, that you would have to be responsible for that child. Because in that day, and as Christians, Who in the world, if they were going to choose to have sex and then have a child, would not be responsible for that child? Because there was a consensus of conscience, they never thought that that would have to be a conversation they would have to have. There was a divine accountability to God. God had brought them here, freed them from the British Empire. So there is a sense that everybody was following Christ and that everybody understood that we had a divine accountability to God, that God gave us our freedom. God gave us our liberty. God is the one who helped us get here and protected us, and so we owe him. We owe him our honor. We owe him our love. We owe him our worship. And so there is a belief that everyone would worship God and would follow God and believe in the teachings of the Bible and believe in the teachings of Jesus. Then there was also this idea of individual expression governed by a concern for other individuals. There was this assumption that they had that never, ever, ever would anybody ever say to somebody else, I have the right to do this, but you don't. And never did they believe, there was an assumption that people would individually express their rights, but they would always do it for a concern for other people. That never, ever, ever would I use my rights to go against your rights. Never would I use my rights to take advantage of my neighbor. Because in that day and age, you needed your neighbor. I mean, you needed your community. You did not want to tick off your neighbor. You didn't want to hurt your neighbor. We need each other. The only way we're going to make it is if we're together. So there was this assumption that everyone would express their given rights, concerned for other people. And one of the places we see this is the Ten Commandments, the Declaration of Independence. It says this, we hold these truths to be self-evident, meaning everybody understands this because there's this consensus of conscience. Because everybody believes the same thing. Everybody believes what's wrong and what is right, and we're all on the same page. This is pretty self-evident, and we're all on the same page, that all men are created equal. I don't need to tell you that. We don't need a bill of rights or a bill of responsibilities to remind you that, that we are all in this together, and that we are all equally important. And it doesn't matter what race we are, what color we are, where we come from, what our background is. It's self-evident that all of us are equal and that we were endowed by our Creator with these unalienable rights. Meaning, we believe that these rights that we have, these liberties, these freedoms, they're not man-made. They come from God. God is the one who gave them to us. And so we have this divine accountability to him. We have this sense that we owe him our liberty and our freedom because everything that we have that's good has come from him. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's self-evident we're all on the same page that we understand that everyone's important. I would never use my rights to stomp on somebody else's rights or to take advantage of somebody else's rights. And I understand that I have a divine accountability to the Creator who gave me these rights. John Adams, he said this, because there's a trick into the system that America was built on. He said this, he said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. So our founding fathers, when they built the American system, when they wrote the Bill of Rights, when they wrote the Constitution, there was this idea that everyone would be on the same page, that there would be this consensus of conscience, that we would all have divine accountability to God because he gave us these freedoms, and that we would never use our rights to hurt anybody else. And John Adams says, here's the thing you got to understand about this American system and what makes America so great is that it was built on and it was made for only a moral and religious people. And it will always be inadequate, uncomparable to any other government in the world. But it only works when we are a moral and religious people with a consensus of conscience and divine accountability to God, and are able to express our rights without infringing on anybody else's rights. Now, does that sound like America today? No. This is why we're talking about this today, because today we're so concerned with making America great again. right? I mean, that was how President Trump, that was his tagline, that was his brand that he carried in order to get into office, and it worked because people want America to be great again, and people recognize that there's a problem and that there needs to be a solution to the problem. And people look to a president and people look to a government in order to fix our problems. But here's the problem. The founding fathers of our country never intended for the government to be the problem solvers. The people who built our America never intended for a president to solve our solutions or for the government to make our solutions. Really, the government shouldn't really even have as big a job as it does. It shouldn't have as big a say as it does. Because what was intended is that everything would be worked out among the people, because the people would be a moral and religious people, and that they would have a consensus of conscience, that they would have a divine about accountability to God, and that they would use their rights, and they had a lot of rights and a lot of freedom, but they would never use it to infringe on anybody else's rights. That everything would work out among itself. However, that's not what happens today. Instead, we take things to the government, we take things to the Supreme Court, and we look to the government, and we look to the news, and we look to our president in order to fix our troubles, in order to make America great again. But that's not what was intended to happen. See, you got to understand what laws are, okay? Here's what you have to understand about what a law is and the purpose of laws and why laws were ever created in the first place. Because at first, laws didn't exist, okay? When the founding fathers came over to America and they landed, they didn't sit down and go, okay, we need some rules, we need some laws. That's not how it happened. They created the Bill of Rights, and they thought people would have a consensus of conscience, a divine accountability to God, and would not use their rights to infringe upon somebody else's rights. However, what would happen is somebody would say, I have the right to do this, and somebody would say, no, you don't. That infringes upon my rights. I think I have the right to do this, and there was a disagreement. And that's what would happen is there would be a disagreement about who is infringing on whose rights and who is right and who is wrong and who used their rights to take advantage of somebody else. And so then it would be discussed among a jury, among a judge, among a Supreme Court, and then they would decide who was right and who was wrong. What was legal, right? And that's how we get laws. But here's the problem with this, okay? And this is why we have to get out of this system. Is we've got to understand is the problem is us. The problem is that no more are we a moral or religious people. No more do we have a consensus of conscience or a divine accountability to God. And because of that, many times we use our rights to infringe on other people's rights. And we think, well, it's fine. We'll take them to court. We'll get a law made. A law will fix it. But here's what you've got to understand about that. You are leaving what's right and what's wrong up to another jury, judge, Supreme Court group of people who do not have a consensus of conscience, who do not have a divine accountability to God, and who have agendas, who have strings at times that don't always make the decision about what is actually right, but what's best for business or what's best for them or what's best for their party. So here's the problem. We're like, well, let's just make another law. Let's get a law passed. Really? Is that the system that you want to have where we can't decide among ourselves what should be done, where we can't choose the right thing to do? So we'll just leave it into other people's hands, so that they can control us. Because here's what happened. When we have a country and a system built on laws, this is the end result that we end up having. A system built on laws ends up the rich rule the poor, women are a commodity, children are victims, if it's legal, it's moral, and everybody looks for a loophole, and we give the government more control. If we can't figure this out and get back to the foundation of what our country was built on, this is what will happen. And we will continue to run to presidents, and we will continue to run to governments, and we will continue to run to Supreme Courts and justices and juries who do not have a consensus of conscience, who do not have a divine accountability to God, who have their own agendas in mind. And this is what we end up with. I don't know about you, but this doesn't seem like a country that's all that great. See, here's what you understand about the law. The law is the minimum requirement. The law is the very minimum requirement. So if you say to yourself, again, you know, we talked about last week, I want to believe in God, but I don't need to because I'm good. If you say, I'm a good person because I follow the law, well, here's the thing. The law is the bare requirement. That's what the law represents. It's the minimum, the very least. If you say, I'm a good person because I follow the laws, you're a C student. That's what you are. We don't need to be C students. And that's what we're talking about this today, is that we as Christians have to step up. We as Christians have to be the examples that live by the system that the founding fathers intended us to live. As we celebrate our freedom and as we celebrate our liberty on July 4th, we have to understand why we have that freedom and why we have that liberty. And it's because of a creator God who gave it to us. And we have to understand that we have a divine accountability to him. And we have to live out his message and we have to live out his word. And we have to be the ones that check ourselves most to ensure that our rights don't infringe on somebody else's rights. And we, even as Christians today, it's so amazing, we as Christians today have to get back to a consensus of conscience. Because it's amazing today how one person can call themselves Christian and another person can call themselves Christian, and yet they have totally separate theologies, totally different methods, totally different ways of living, totally different ways of working, totally different ways of dealing with their neighbor. Even as Christians today, there's no consensus of conscience. So what do we do? What is it that we need to do? I feel like the answer and what the founding fathers of our country were basing everything off of was not even their idea. It's not even my idea. It's something that the Apostle Paul said. If we look at Galatians, this is what he said in Galatians. And in this letter, when he's writing to this group of people, he's writing to Gentiles, okay? So, you know, in the Old Testament, the people of God, the Israelites, they were Jewish. And they had Jewish laws. But when Jesus came, Jesus, again, changed the game. And all of a sudden, a relationship with God was open to everybody. God was not the God of the Jews any longer. He was the God of everybody. And so Gentiles, they were invited to have a relationship with God. But what happened was is that the Gentiles believed that they needed to act Jewish. That if they were going to be Christian, if they were going to be followers of God, they had to act Jewish and they had to, you know, pick up the Jewish laws, and especially about eating and different things and all the traditions, they needed to be acting very Jewish. And Paul says that's not the case at all. He says this, "For you have been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters." That Old Testament law, God didn't do away with it, but you don't need to worry about that. That's not the biggest concern. We're past the gold star system. You've been called to live in freedom. You've been given freedom through Jesus Christ and his death on the cross. But here's the thing I want you to understand. Don't use that freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. I know, as soon as you hear the words, you've got freedom. Don't worry about, you know, the gold star system. Don't worry about, you know, doing these certain things. You got a lot of freedom. You got a lot of liberty. Well, woohoo! Let me show you what I'm going to do with that freedom. No, no, no. Don't use that freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love. So Paul says this, when you've been given this freedom. You have this ability. You can do what you want, when you want, with whom you want. It's all good. You have this freedom to do so much, and you've been given this liberty. And here's the thing. It's very, very easy to use that in order to get what you want, in order to satisfy your sinful appetite. Because let's be honest, we're all naturally selfish, so it's very, very easy when somebody comes at you or when there's an opportunity for you to use your freedom and take advantage of it. But he says, don't do that. Don't use your freedom to hurt anybody else, to infringe on anybody else's rights. And then he says this in verse 14. He says, "For you have been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters. But don't use your freedom to satisfy sinful nature. Instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love. For the whole law can be summed up in this command: love your neighbor as yourself." Again, just what Jesus said as well, when Jesus was asked, what is the greatest command? Tell us what's the greatest rule in the rule book. What is the greatest Jewish law? He said, everything can be summed up in this. It's like a two-sided coin. Love God and love your neighbor. You cannot love your neighbor unless you love God, and you cannot love God without loving your neighbor first. And Paul echoes the same thing. Here's what I want you to do. Everything can be summed up in this. Use your freedom, use your liberty that you have to love your neighbor as yourself. See, here's a question we all really need to answer. Is how can I leverage my rights? How can I leverage my rights to help others? How can I take my freedom, my liberty as a Christian that's been given to me because of the country that I live in, and that's only been given to me because of a divine creator who freed us many, many years ago. How can I use that freedom, my liberty, my rights that I have to do whatever I want, when I want, with whom I want, how can I leverage those rights for other people? Because it's not about me. Well, I want to give you three suggestions, three things you can start to do today. And this is the stuff that would make America great again, because this is what America was made of when the Constitution was created. Do what's responsible, not what's permissible. Again, the laws, that's the bare minimum, right? The bare minimum requirements represent the law. So if you say, you know what, I follow the laws, I'm a good person, I'm a law-abiding citizen. No, you're not. You're a C student. But as Christians, here's what we should do. We should be doing what's responsible, not what's permissible. Just because somebody says it's okay to do doesn't mean we should do it. And God directs us in that path. God helps us understand that. And here's the other part of that. Do what's moral, not what's modeled. I want to challenge you, okay? I want to challenge you to do something because I've decided to do this myself. And again, you don't have to do this, but here's what. Stop watching the news. Stop watching the news. Stop it. Because media and news today is simply entertainment, folks. It's not news. It's not. You want to be informed? There's a lot of ways to be informed. They have grabbed you, and it is a way to take your attention. And your attention and your time, your focus, is a precious commodity that they love to draw in. And our government, and even our president, and again, I'm not bashing anybody. This is just the way it is. They model a behavior that is not moral today. And it's so easy to look and say, look, there's my leaders doing it. There's my government doing it. This is what they do on the TV. This is what the celebrities do. This is the newest trend. This is how people comment on Facebook. This is how you attack somebody. Just because it's modeled doesn't mean it's moral. And we need to, as Christians, leverage our rights for the benefit of others, not to tear other people down, not to go after people just because it's permissible, just because it's modeled, doesn't make it responsible and doesn't make it moral. And then do what honors God, not what honors you. So many times we come at these debates, we come at these agendas, and we expect that there's going to be a winner. I don't know about you, but I haven't seen any winners so far. We model this behavior, and we think it's permissible, and we see it modeled to us, and so, you know, we see everybody else getting theirs, and we say, well, I'm going to get mine, but it doesn't honor God, and it's not responsible, and it's not moral, and we have to be so, so, so very careful, and I think Paul knew this. Paul knew this. Paul said, you know, you've got these freedoms, so don't use your freedoms to give in to your sinful natures and your sinful desires. You got to be really careful. Instead, use them to love your neighbor. Instead, leverage your rights in order to help other people. But then he tacked this on. It's just so beautiful that it's right after this. He said in verse 15, he says, but if you don't do that, if you don't love your neighbor as yourself, if you don't leverage your rights for the benefit of others, if you use your freedoms in the wrong way, if you are always biting and devouring one another, watch out, because you will destroy one another. And isn't that the truth? Isn't that the sad truth of what we see more often than anything in our country and on the news and on the TV and in the media and in the White House and in the Supreme Court? Isn't this what we see, that we have people biting and devouring one another, destroying one another. And here's a very bold statement that you may not like. We are so concerned today with terrorists and immigrants and people who don't belong here because we think they're the problem. But here's my opinion. Americans are America's biggest problem. Maybe not the issue is the small amount of people who are coming in here, running from other governments who they've given control to, who they've allowed to take control of and make women a commodity, children victims, who create laws and systems in order to benefit so the rich can control the poor. See, that's what has happened everywhere else. And our founding fathers intended our country and our government and our systems to be inadequate, to be unique to any other. But however, what's happening is America is falling in the same trap that everybody else has been in for a very long time. And the biggest problem today, Americans are America's biggest problem. Because there's no consensus of conscience. There's no divine accountability to God. And we use our rights to infringe on other people's rights. Here's what John Adams said as well about what they created. He said, "You will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. And I hope you will make good use of it. Because if you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it." That was a mic drop. John Adams, our founding fathers, people and the writers of our Constitution said there is only one way if this works. We're a moral and religious people. Now, what do we do with that? What do we do if our system is failing because it was built on these guidelines and these principles that are intended to follow and most people don't? Well, here's the question that you have to ask yourself. The question that you have to ask yourself is, how will you use your freedom? Because it starts with you. You can be the difference, and you can be the change. But you have to stop and ask yourself first, how will you use your freedom that you've been given? Will you use it for your own desires? Will you use it to take your own advantages? Will you use it to feed that sinful nature and that sinful desire? Will you use it to get yours? Will you use it to win your debate? Will you use it to make sure that your party is the party that wins? Or instead, could you and would you use it to possibly love your neighbor as yourself? And would it not in turn, if you used your freedom to love your neighbor, would you not indeed love your God? See, the government's not going to change things and laws aren't going to fix things and no president is ever going to fix what's been broken. It starts with us and it starts in our communities and it starts in our city and it starts in our church. It's the whole reason why we planted this church, to bring the kingdom to light, to be the example, to be the people. When we leave here, when we go to work, to be able to love our neighbor as ourselves, to be able to love our coworker the way that we wish we were loved when we started the job or when we had a bad day, to be able to love our families the way that we would love to see our families be loved, that how God would love our families. And remember that everybody out there is also somebody else's wife, mother, daughter, son. That whenever I go to the restaurant and I have a bad experience with that waiter and she's tripping up and she's doing messing things up, that I look at her and I remember, you know what, that's somebody else's daughter. How would I want somebody to talk to my wife or my daughter if they were having a bad day, if they were making mistakes, and then I choose to use my freedom, my right to free speech, to talk to that person in a loving way? When I write a Facebook post, when I comment to somebody, when I reply to somebody, to respond in a way that would represent Christ, that would use my freedoms and my rights to say whatever I want, when I want, with whom I want, in a loving way to love my neighbor. Man, let me tell you something. If we did that, just even in our community, the cops wouldn't have a job. You guys would just get to eat donuts all day. Because there would be nothing to solve, there would be nobody to go after, there would be nothing to do. Because there would be a consensus of conscience, a divine accountability to God, and everyone would be using their rights in the right way, not infringing on other people's rights. And so the cops would have nothing to do. We would not need as many government officials. They would have such an easy job. They could just continue to do what they're doing now and just sit and do nothing, you know, and argue with one another occasionally if they wanted. The Supreme Court, there would be no need for the Supreme Court because the system would solve itself. And that's how America was built, that the liberty and freedoms would be in the hands of the people. And that nobody would have to control or empower anybody else because we would all be living responsibly. But it starts with you. How will you use your freedom? Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning I thank you so much for our freedom. God, you have given us such a great gift. You've made our government, our country, so unique. And I thank you so much for the freedoms that we're able to enjoy. And I thank you so much for the rights that you gave us. But God, this morning, I think every single one of us probably need to repent and ask for forgiveness for a time where we've used our rights to take advantage of somebody else. We've used our freedom and our liberty to say something that shouldn't have been said, to get ahead, to take advantage, to profit from. God, there's been probably so many times where we've probably taken advantage of the system, tried to find a loophole, and we've thought for a long time, hey, if it's legal, it's right. But God, you've really shown us today, it's not why you gave us this freedom. It's not why you sent our ancestors here so many years ago to this country. God, you gave us this awesome opportunity to be free from a government, to be able to have, you know, life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And you gave us all of that so that we would be a community that would watch over one another, that would care for one another, that would follow your greatest command, that would be Christianity 101, to love our neighbor as ourselves. Because God, in turn, when we love one another, we love you. When we take the love that you've shown us and we spread it out among people, it's this awesome, beautiful family tree that's created. And God, that's exactly how you intended it to be. So God, this week, as we celebrate July 4th, would you help us to take a moment to remember what it is we're celebrating? And God, will you help us to take a moment to understand that this life, and this liberty, that this freedom that you've given us, it's not to be used in the wrong way. That God, you gave it to us. You blessed us with it. You gifted it to us so that we could use it in order to help others. Because God, we need one another. God, will you help us to live that out this week? Will you forgive us of the times where we haven't? And will you help us take these principles, what you talked about with Paul, will you help us to take it into our workplaces, into our schools, into our homes, into our neighborhoods, into our communities, into our baseball teams, whatever it may be, God, will you help us to take it and to live it out, this principle, and so that it would be so contagious, that it would be something that people would see and people would say, you know what, I want to do that too. Somebody's done that for me, and so I'm going to pass it on, and I'm going to do that for somebody else. I want to live by these Christian principles. I want to get back on the same page. I'm going to get in my word. I'm going to understand what it is that how God wants us to live. I want this consensus of conscience. I want to understand my theology. I want to understand what I'm supposed to believe. Because God, that is the only saving grace that our country has left. So God, will you help us to get there? And I pray, God, that it would start with these 80 people that are in here this morning, Lord. God, I love you. We love you. We thank you so much. We praise things in your name. Amen.